Sunday afternoon. Let's see. October 21st. Okay, Chavis Alvav Shara Bechina. And he's going through a person. He said of all the disciplines that we should talk about, he'll pick a person to go through because that's the closest to us, the one we feel we have the most kesher to. And he went through the development of a person's life. And now he's up to the human anatomy. We're up to the words in the Chovos Halvavos, Hayodayim lo kachas velo seis. The last thing we did was we did child. He talked about child illnesses. He talked about the teeth, and then he talked. Okay, v'achakach yoshev alibo. That really should stop the paragraph. V'achakach yoshev alibo. Oh, I'm taka. I started early. Avigdor Miller on his tapes and in his books, you know, if you decide to adapt, I would recommend it. It did a lot for me to adapt one your life as an Eved Hashem through the prism of the Chovos Halvavos' perspective on things. So we know from Shaar Avodas Elokim, which is really following Shaar HaBechina because of the way he structures it, that our Avodas Hashem consists of gratitude. And Shaar HaBechina teaches us how much we have to be grateful for. And it's just a drop in the bucket, as we say in Nishmas, in Anachlam Maspikim, Lahodos Lecha Hashem Elokeinu Belokei Avoseinu Alachas, even on one, May Elef Alfei Alofim Veri Be Revavos Pamim Atovos, Shasisam Avosenu Vimanu. Now the Chovos Halvavos, he goes through the human anatomy. I just want to read you a little from Rabbi Miller's Sefer on Chovos Halvavos. I'll read it to you, even though my wife tells me not to read from the Sefer when I'm speaking. But first of all, it's in English, so make believe I'm talking. But then I would be stealing from him, so I'm telling you it's him talking. And anyway, there's no way I could express it as... If I would say this, you might not believe me. So I'll quote him, and then Rabbi Miller. So this is just like a hakdama. Three times a day in Shemona Esrei, we say Modim Anachnu Lach. We thank you. So we are giving thanks, and we're shuckling, and with tightly closed eyes. Right? See, if I would say this, you'd say I'm cynical. So Rabbi Miller says we say it with tightly closed eyes as we're shuckling. But what is going on in our mind? Are we really being grateful? Do we feel grateful? Or are we going through empty motions without any real meaning? Maybe the motions of a person wanting to be from. But it's nothing. And it's true for you, the young or you're old. You want to serve Hashem and be loyal to Hashem. But you don't feel like Hashem is doing anything for you. You can be truly grateful when you realize what Hashem does for you in providing you all the things we're learning about in Shaar HaBechina. And you need to study the nose and the eyes and all the things that the Chovos Halvavos mentions in this perek and throughout Shaar HaBechina. And you have to, you're grateful to him. When we talk about the nose, so you say the nose. So the nose in the Chayvus Halvavus, we'll be learning it today, is just two words. He doesn't write a whole treatise on the nose. I'm going to give homework. Right? The nose, the nose really does a lot of things. The nose, we'll learn about it when we get up to the words. My point is, he says two words. And he says, when you say Modim Anachnu Lach, he says, you could think about your nose. If you pick one thing, he suggests picking one thing to be grateful for every time we say Modim Anachnu Lach. Because if you would really be into this and start thinking about all the things you have to be grateful for, it's just overwhelming. Because there are millions of things just in the human anatomy. And then there's the world. There's the sun and the moon and gravity and space and rain and sunlight. And that's overwhelming. And then there's history. And then there's Klal Yisrael history. And then there's my own personal history, starting from the fact that I exist. So really it would be overwhelming and you wouldn't know what to do. So he says maybe every time you say Modim Anachnu Lach, so that it shouldn't be empty words, and when you bow down, bowing is a, we don't really bow, I mean, bowing Hishtachavoah is you lie pressed, you're totally flat on the ground, which we never ever do, not even on Yom Kippur we don't lay flat on the ground. What we really do is called Kriya. We don't really do Hishtachavoah. But the idea of Hishtachavoah and all of its attendant forms, which is Kida, Kriya, they're all forms of saying, I am nothing to Hashem. I'm Batel. It's a Bittul. It's a physical Bittul to stimulate feelings of Bittul. So an Eved is a Mishtachavet to the Master, and in body language is saying, I am nothing to you. I am nothing. So he says, if you tell this to ordinary people, even to Bnei Torah, who have never learned about the significance of the nose, I'm picking this part of it, they will be skeptical. But to truly be an Eved Hashem, you need to become familiar with all the functions of your body. And then, once you become aware of all the other things Hashem does for us, you will be so loaded down with things to thank Him for that you may know what to do when you get to Modim. Therefore, each time you say Modim Anachnu Lach, pick one thing that you're grateful for and focus your mind on that. And he says, your gratitude will be empty unless you have studied Shar HaBechina. See, you're so lucky you came to this class. Now you have another thing to thank Hashem for. Each time you say it, have in mind something specific. And don't limit your study to what the author of the Chayvus Halvavus tells us, because the author himself tells us that he's just giving us a general summary. I'm going to expand on what the Chayvus Halvavus says, but that's like only a small, almost infinitesimal expansion. He just says two words. Now imagine telling all of this, I'm reading from him, he says, imagine telling all of this to a person who has never studied Chayvus Halvavus. You go over and say, you know, I am so happy Hashem gave me a nose. He says, he will look at you as if you're crazy. But in truth, he's the one that's crazy. He doesn't begin to realize what a great gift he's ignoring. And so most of the people of the world who have never learned Chovos Halvavos, and that's just this part of Chovos Halvavos, are like people walking around in darkness. You cannot be an Oved Hashem unless you spend time studying this subject, the subject of Bechina. And again, Bechina is the seven disciplines that we learned about months and months and months ago, that he listed in the beginning of the Shire, the seven disciplines. So we're like in a very narrow bandwidth of the entire spectrum of thanks that we should be giving. Getting back to the text that we're up to, he says, "V'achakach yoshev alibo." A person should focus his mind v'yistakel and study. And by the way, the Chayvus Halvavus says that he's only mentioning in passing a small part of what's out there, and this is a sefer written over 1,000 years ago. Our knowledge of the complexity and the wisdom and the chesed—right—that's what everything's all about here. The complexity. I just want to, I'm sorry, I keep, I don't know, it depends. He focuses really more, Rabbi Miller focuses really more on the gratitude aspect. I just want to remind everyone that the Chavis Alvada sees Shar HaBechina as also a Chizuk Emuna aspect, as a continuation of Shar HaYichud, not just as a precursor to Shar HaBodes Elokim, but also as a Hemshech and as a fortifier of Shar HaYichud. V'yistakel b'toelas evorei gufo ba'ofenai takonoso b'kol echod mehem, meaning how you benefit from each one of them. Hayadayim, hands, lakachas veloseis, to give, to take, and to give. Now, I did a little research on hands. It can't become a biology class. Then it'll remind you of school, and you'll never be back. But just one remarkable thing, because I talked to my daughter, who's studying to be an OT, to be an occupational therapist, yeah. So she learned all this stuff. I asked her to come in and lecture to us, but she can't. The hand is one of the most sophisticated, so I downloaded stuff and I looked through it. The hand is one of the most sophisticated aspects of the human body. The brain, and my daughter confirmed this, most of the motor section of the brain is devoted to the hands. It's like 25%. The biggest percentage of the motor part of the brain is devoted to the hands. Your hands are superbly designed tools of amazing strength and dexterity. They can pinch, grasp, twist, lift, hold, manipulate, while doing a wide variety of other specific tasks. They're a complex system of bones, muscle, tendons, ligaments, blood vessels, nerves, protected by layers of skin. A total of 27 hand and wrist bones are connected to the muscle by tendons. Ligaments join bones together and hold the joints in place. Blood vessels supply nourishment to all of these parts. The reason we can use our hands for so many things is their extraordinary anatomy. Underneath the skin, hands are an exquisite integration of tissues. The thumb alone is controlled by 9 separate muscles. Some are anchored to bones within the hand, others snake their way to the arm. The wrist is a floating cluster of bones and ligaments threaded with blood vessels and nerves. The nerves send branches into each fingertip. The hand can generate fine forces or huge ones. Now listen to this. The hand is so remarkable that the great Scottish surgeon Sir Charles Bell wrote an entire book in 1833 praising it, called The Hand, Its Mechanism and Vital Endowments, as Evincing Design. This is a guy that wrote a book in 1833, because at that time the notion that life evolved was beginning to circulate. And he wrote this book to dispel such silly talk. So, in other words, this guy is saying that the best proof of Shar HaYichud, that's what he was saying. He's saying the best, that was Darwin, I guess, started around then, and that kind of talk. And he said, the hand is the best raya. It's just, so my daughter tells me, like, yeah, but what about the eye? Like, the eye is much more. And then my other daughter, who's starting to be a speech therapist, she says, yeah, what about the ear and the voice? And they start arguing, like, which is more complex and which is more... I'll read now from Rabbi Miller. The joints of the hands all work together to grip an object, with each finger and the separate joints on that finger acting in a coordinated fashion. The movements are carried out by many individual muscles operating together in pairs of opposing muscles. I mean, my daughter explained to me that it's always two muscles working in tandem, like one's expanding and one's contracting, coordinating. When we look at our hands, we begin to realize that it's a tremendous gift to be able to move our hands and manipulate objects with them. Unfortunately, there are people who are not able to move their hands. Yeah, and that's when there's a lack of cooperation between the nerves and the muscles, the hand becomes paralyzed. Study your hands and appreciate them more. Put some thought into it. I'm quoting from Rabbi Miller now. At least once in your life, study about hands and realize what a gift it is. Like I'm thinking now, as I'm speaking to you, what am I doing with my hands? I'm using a finger to keep the place. I used my fingers to make sure that I'm only turning one page, and I turned that page, so that's a certain Edelkeit of feeling I had to have. I'm gesticulating. I'm trying this an Indian of sign language, body language, and I'm using my hands to make a point. And it's just, so we're going to move on now. But I really, as I went through the, as I googled, you know, just the words of the human hand, it's just it's endless. You could spend months and months and you know, just studying the complexity. And I don't know if the Chavis knew all of that. Like, I mean, he knew. I'm sure we know much more than he did. And he says, you know, he doesn't say anything here. He just says the hands. Okay, next words, the haraglayim laleches, feet to walk, being able to, I'm reading from Rabbi Miller, being able to walk is a great miracle that deserves study. Being able to stand is a blessing. The act of standing is achieved by continuously balancing leg and foot muscles. A wooden pole won't stand by itself. A human being is tall and narrow, and yet is able to stand up and stay upright even when pushed. All the while, when we get to the ear, that's the balance, the etzem balance is in the ear, right? That you have those things in the human being has things in his ear which makes which keeps a sense of balance. But the physical balancing is in the foot, using all of the muscles to adjust your balance so that he won't fall over to one side. So just standing is a great achievement. When he wants to start walking, his thighs have to swing from their hip sockets and the knees have to bend back and forth. The ankles, feet, and toes all have to work together to give him a push forward by pressing against the ground. All the body parts involved in a simple step, one step, must cooperate in a series of complex motions like a choir with 1,000 members who cooperate in singing a complex melody. There are large bones, small bones, major muscles, minor muscles, and network of nerves that transmit signals to activate the muscles, all at the right time and with the right amount of force. So each morning when you say the bracha, Hamechin Mitzadei Gover, you establish a person's footsteps, you are talking briefly about this great miracle. It is important that you know what you're saying every morning when you thank Hashem for the gift of walking. Many people can only sit in a wheelchair, they can't get up and walk around. When they see you walking, they realize what a great gift they once possessed. They think back to the good old days when they have the happiness and joy of the power of walking. They lost that now, some have lost it forever. Therefore, as long as you're able to walk, you have to appreciate it and thank Hashem. That's the very least you can do to show your appreciation for this great gift. The limbs of the body are so complicated that surgery on any one of them is always a risk, because no surgeon can completely be trusted when it comes to a hand, a foot, or a knee. Operations on some of the other organs are simpler, but the limbs are so complex in their arrangement of muscles, tendons, and connections to the bones that in many cases people are advised that it's better to suffer some degree of disability rather than undergo surgery. Once a surgeon works on the muscles or the tendons of the knee, there's a risk of being crippled for life. Knowing this helps us appreciate how complicated the limbs are and when they are healthy and working perfectly. Another aspect of the human foot, just quickly, is that the more you use them, the tougher the skin becomes, which is not true of shoes. Right? They get worn out and need to be repaired, but the heels and soles of the foot build up a protective layer of thick skin when they're heavily used. The same is true of the palms of the hands of manual laborers. They never get worn out, and adarabah, they become hard, like leather. Miraculously, Hashem made our bodies so that the more we need them,
And the more we use them, the stronger they become. The more we walk around, the stronger our feet become. The stronger our whole body becomes. That's why exercise is so important. Hashem made this miracle, which is that your body gets stronger the more you use it, so that the body doesn't become worn out by use. You may become tired, but then you go to sleep, and you get rejuvenated through sleep. But tiredness is not the physical body getting worn out. That is a miracle of miracles, that the body is tougher and better and works better the more you use it. The more we use our muscles, the stronger and more powerful they become. The less we use our muscles, the weaker they become. And so not only do we see that the limbs operate in a miraculous fashion, but they're engineered that they can be used for a very long time with the best results. Okay, we'll move on. V'ainayim, and really again, everything, I mean, I wish maybe among Mrs. Mavericks, you gotta give out an assignment. You assign one person the hands, one person the feet. Next. And then we're up to the third person. V'ainayim liros. Right? This is talk about seeing. He says, even Darwin, he says, who introduced evolution, admitted that it is highly absurd to believe that the human eye could have developed by an evolutionary process. He said that was the thing that bothered him the most, the eye. The eyes are more effective than any camera. They can precisely sense a wide range of colors and can instantaneously adjust their focus from close objects to those far away. They adjust to the amount of light. In a dark room, they let in more light. In a well-lit area, they let in less light. When we look at our eyes, we have to realize we're looking at the very best cameras in the world. Each morning when you say the bracha Bokeach Ivrim, I mean, my wife just went with my son to the blind museum. There's a museum in Israel that you experience 3 hours of being blind. And they take you through, like, okay, you're in a forest now, or you're in a house now, or you're outside now, and you go through different things in life, and it's, you're blind. It's pitch black, and you start to... I asked my son if he's going to make the bracha Pokeach Ivrim differently every day from now on. See, he said yes. What's he going to answer me? And that's just the ability to see it. And again, the ability to see, and then the complexity of how the eyes work. A cute sentence here. The greatest blindness of all is not to recognize the blessing of vision. When people say the blessing every day and don't think about what they're saying, they are the true Ivrim. By learning Chaydus Halavus, you are opening your eyes and gaining sight. Eyebrows and eyelashes may look good, but that's not the reason we have them. We have eyebrows to catch the perspiration that drips from our foreheads. We have eyelashes to keep away the dust. When we are sleeping, our eyelashes, which are constantly flickering, discourage insects from exploring the sensitive area. Insects avoid the hair of the eyelashes because they fear getting caught in them. The eyelids remain closed over the eyes when we're sleeping so that they're not exposed to foreign objects. At that, the eyes are a miracle of miracles. Not only is each eye a miracle, the two eyes function together so that they are both looking at the same thing. Also, whatever the eye sees become a picture that's recorded in the brain forever. If we look at a person, the picture of that person will always remain in our minds. We may not think about that person for 40 years, but when we see him again, we are reminded of the time we saw him 40 years ago. And our brain compares the new picture of this person with the original picture from 40 years ago. And we instantaneously make the match. The mind is full of pictures that the eyes are taking. This is why you're not supposed to look at things you're not supposed to look at, he says. Because you're having an image on your brain, and that image stays there. Okay, this is Manrix. Number 3 is the eyes. I'm not joking, by the way. You'll talk afterwards. You'll give out homework. All you have to do, ladies, I mean, I don't know if you have a computer at home. Everybody does. If you have Google, just type in the words, the human eye. And you're going to get like 18 million results. You just have to use the first 10. And the first one's always going to be Wikipedia. and there's going to be an overwhelming amount of information there. Not always so clear. Usually if you go to the one that's written for children, that's the best. So that's our level of what we're able to... I mean, I found out, I looked at all these things. The best is the one written for like children and teenagers. That's, you know, we're able to comprehend. I mean, when it's what's written for the, like, an intelligent student, it's just totally overwhelming. It's just totally overwhelming. Okay, but aznayim lishmoa, right? Then comes the ears. Hearing is a complex process that involves converting sound waves. I think we all know how hearing works. Converting sound waves. I don't know if the Chaim Soloveitchik did. I don't know, from the days of the Chaim Soloveitchik, in the beginning and the turn of the century, of the 20th century, not what am I talking, the beginning of the 1100s. So did they know how sound works? I don't know. Converting sound waves traveling through the ear into intelligence. Sound waves are caused by vibrations. The vibrations of a person's vocal cords when he's speaking, the vibrations of a string in a musical instrument. The vibrations move through the ear in a form of fast-moving pressure waves. They're essentially pulses of slightly compressed air. The pressure waves reaching the eardrum are so faint that you can't feel the sensation, but the eardrum is extremely sensitive and throbs under the impact of the pressure waves, converts the pressure waves back into mechanical vibrations by pushing against three little bones behind the eardrum. They are connected to each other in a way that the pushing of the eardrum against the bones amplifies the vibrations. The vibrations are then converted. You have to laugh when you read. And this is so basic. This is like basic Sheva basic. This is like nothing. It's like kid stuff. Tipa Sheva Yam. The vibrations are then converted to electrical nerve impulses, which are sent to the brain where they are interpreted as sound. What we think of as sound actually exists only in our mind. So that's the answer to the question if a tree falls in a forest. There's no such thing as sound. It's in your mind. Everywhere else, except in your brain, it's nothing more than physical vibrations or pressure waves. That's one thing the ear does. It hears. The inner ear also contains the organs that we use to maintain balance. That's something to think about, I think, on a philosophical basis. Why the aver that allows you to hear things, and hearing in Hebrew means hearing and understanding and absorbing and thinking about it, like Shema Yisrael means all these things, V'hoyam Shema Tishma'u, to obey. Like hearing has a very wide range of meanings in Lashon Kodesh, and it's all associated with the aver of the ear, and that helps you keep your balance. It doesn't have to be in the ear, right? It could have been in my hair, it could have been in my nose, it could have been anywhere, in my knee. So that's, I never thought about that. It's something to think about, like why balance, keeping balance is in the aver that takes in things from the outside, but not the way. See, the eye is very little more. The eye takes in things, but on a more superficial level. I mean, that's why hearing in Hebrew and Lashon Kodesh means also to absorb, to understand, and to obey. It's a deeper intake than seeing. Seeing is like more superficial. You take a picture and you see it. Hearing, you see, like enters me. That's why it's my ears. Like it enters the ear. We don't talk about things entering the eye. It's like superficial, like it stops at the camera. This enters into me. It's certainly everything. We're learning it as if, I mean, the little Tipa Shabiyam that I'm talking about is only the secular chitzoniistic description of the physical metzias. Remember that everything is coordinated with kochos hanefesh, and everything is that's why you could talk about hearing as absorbing and listening and obeying and understanding, because the nefesh has a koach shmiya. Right? As we say, you know, you're not really hearing with your ear; you're hearing with your brain, and it's a kolach hanefesh, and it says, like, sometimes it says, like, Hashem hears, right? The pasuk describes Hashem as hearing, which of course cannot mean anything physical. We know that. The Rambam actually talks about that in Hilchos Yesodei Torah, how he talks about Gedolei Olam made mistakes about Hashem's physicality in some sense because of all the Lashonah of the Chumash. And the Rambam says it's a terrible, terrible, terrible error. The Ravid, like, says, like, great people made that error. And it's not clear what the Ravid's point is. It's not clear what the Ravid means to say, because that, as at this time in history already, we've totally accepted the idea that this is 0-0-0 physicality. When I talk physicality, I don't mean a body, chas v'shalom. No one ever thought this, a body. Anyway, but the point is, if it talks about Hashem hearing, that should teach us something. It teaches us that hearing is so much more than physical hearing. It means that there's a koach in the world called hearing, which is a way that I relate to the outside world, and I am taught things. We talk about I'm hearing, and we see that a cheresh, someone that can't speak and can't hear, is considered to have a is considered not to be legally, is considered as if, I say as if, because nowadays it's a little, they have developed things, but in the Gemara's time, certainly a cheresh, a deaf mute, is considered like a shote, in that he's potter from mitzvahs. He can't, if he doesn't relate to the world in a normal way. See, a blind person is not at all like a shote, but someone who can't speak or hear can't communicate, actually, that's really what you're saying. Not just a deaf person and not just a mute, a deaf mute. My point is that it's a koach in the nefesh, and if the pasuk talks about Hashem hearing, it means that there is, everything's kavayochu with Hashem, but it means hearing is a very specific koach hanefesh, which we respond to either someone explaining, right, someone explaining something, or pleading with us. It's a response to speech. It's heavy. I'm not going to go into it now, because the Chavetz Chaim is just talking about the physical thing. But realize that as, after whoever has the homework of the, as complex and as deep and as utterly mind-blowing you're going to find in Wikipedia about hearing, then you have to that's nothing. Then you have to start matching it up to the forces in the universe, to the forces in the nefesh, and how the Aver was made to do that, and it brings out the purpose of nefesh that you have, and it's just, and there's the link between Gashmius and Ruchnius. And remember that each Aver is a mitzvah, right? Reish Mem Ches Avarim, where do I start? Like, everything is linked, and everything is like you start to feel. Yeah. And then you say the Borei Olam, like v'ligdloso ein cheker. You say Ashrei, and you say v'ligdloso ein cheker, and u'gdloscha sapreno, and it's just right, you don't know what to do. You start. Like I say, we should all be dancing in the streets, singing and dancing, thanking Hashem every minute, and that really is what we're supposed to be doing, thanking Hashem every minute. And that's what the Chavetz Chaim Lubavitch is trying to teach us to do. Yeah.
The simple thing that you learn from the point of balance, the idea that when you hear something, your ears help you to balance. I think from the root of the way, that when you're learning something, the right way to go,
that's what I wanted people to think about, to realize that. Anyway, getting back to the physical, because the Chavis HaLovis is not embarrassed to just write. I'm like embarrassed to come in and give a biology class. The Chavis HaLovis was not embarrassed and said, this is an Eved Hashem must do this. Rabbi Victor Miller was not afraid or ashamed to say that an Eved Hashem must study these things in order to be a proper Eved Hashem. Because you have to know, you can't just say, thank you, Hashem. it's hypocritical. You have to feel the thanks. And remember, you're saying Al Chaynum Sum Biyodecha, the Al Nishmosein Abkudoslach, the Al Nisecha Shabachol Yimimanu, the Al Nifla Osecha, the Kovosecha. That's two words, right? We don't think of it as two words. We think of it as one word that is pronounced Al Nifla Osecha with the Osecha. It's two words. Al Nifla Osecha with the Osecha Shabacholais. Most Mepharshim learn that Erev Avoker Vitzaharayim is a phrase that goes back on Nodelecha, that that's when we daven, Erev Avoker Vitzaharayim. It's not a continuation of the Nifla Osecha with the Osecha Shebuchaleis. There's different pshatim in the Siddur, but I think the normative pshat, the consensus of most Mepharshim, is that Erev Avoker Vitzaharayim goes back on the Moda Menachmu Lach, because it's a pasuk in Tillim, for those of you who say Tillim. Erev Avoker Vitzaharayim is David HaMelech describing when he davens. Anyway, so we're back to the balance. A person has to know if he's falling. That is, if his head is moving under the influence of gravity. That's what it means to fall. He also needs to know the orientation of his head. There is a structure of tiny fluid-filled canals that can sense when the head is turning. Two other organs in the inner ear detect movement with respect to gravity. A jelly-like substance inside these two organs is studded with tiny calcium stones called otoconia. These particles fall because of the action of gravity. As the person's head moves in relation to gravity, the particles exert pressure on the nerve endings of tiny hairs that send that information back to the brain about how quickly and in what direction the head is moving. When we lose balance, the signals from the inner ear warn us to straighten up again. People who have ear trouble, even temporarily, lose their sense of balance and are subject to falling when they walk because their balancing organs are not functioning. Now, again, everything we're discussing is literally, please don't think I'm exaggerating, literally thousands of times more complicated than these few words that we're saying here. Well, we could not live a normal life without ears, and therefore we must be thankful to Hashem for that. The ears is a means of communication between people, Kolshke, and learning Torah. This is an interesting question. I'll just read from him, because he just... In the light of the importance of hearing, it has been asked why we don't make a bracha on the gift of hearing as we do for seeing. The answer is that every morning we open up our eyes, because during the night we stop seeing. So we stopped, and now we're thanking Hashem that that came back to us. However, we don't stop hearing during the night. This is actually a wonderful thing, because an unfamiliar noise will wake us up. That noise can alert us to an alarm, or a source of danger, an animal, a burglar. So the ears are continuously active through the night, and Rabbi Miller suggests that that's why we don't make a bracha on it in the morning. But it doesn't stop you from thinking about it. Two more words. This is Manrik's. Next. The nose, the smell. So, Rabbi Miller first has a whole discussion that smelling is important for food. To know that food's spoiled. And that's like a major, major need. In other words, you say, well, you know, so I won't smell. So what's the big deal about smelling? Well, I always I don't smell so well. I think my nose is always stuffed. I have to keep buying new besamim every few weeks because I used to make a bar mitzvah besamim, and then one day I realized I'm making a bracha on the smell of plastic. I got to keep buying. They sell now again in stores like special besamim for Shabbos, for Motzah Shabbos. So some people just pick off a tree every Motzah Shabbos. They just take from a tree. That's really the best. It's fresh. It's fresh. It's great. Yeah, even I can smell that. Anyway, so he's talking about now why it's so important. He has an interesting theory. He says the nose extends beyond the mouth as if to say that before you eat something, smell it. I told this to my wife, she was so happy, because I'm always making fun of her. She takes something. What? I should hope it's true. Oh, okay. The No, taste is connected to smell. No, I'm talking about that it's a shemira, not to eat something spoiled. And it's a nace. Everything, when you get into Shara HaBechina, you really become so alert to the whole world, and you suddenly, everybody should be saying to themselves, and of course I include myself too, wait a second, that's a nace that something smells when it's spoiled. Forget about the nace that I smell, that my nose has the ability to smell it. It's a nace that it smells. It's a nace. Hashem made a nace that when I stay away from something, when something is dangerous, when it's full of bacteria, Rabbi Miller points about that our waste products smell, probably it's the most disgusting smell in the world. That's not by chance. There's nothing that's by chance. It's because it's full of bacteria. It's full of disease-carrying bacteria. It's like the most dangerous thing in the world. And Hashem put the best shemira in the world there. It stinks. Like you're going to run away from it. You can't. It disgusts you. And that's amazing. Thank you, Hashem, that happens. And you stay away from something that's dangerous for the body. Similarly, before food comes into the body, it must be inspected. While the eyes help out to some extent, they are often deceived, especially with food coloring. It's only when we notice the decayed smell of food that we turn away in disgust. That disgust is a miracle. Why should we be disgusted if something is spoiled? Nothing should be taken for granted. The emotion of disgust is planned by Hashem so that when something is nauseating, we get a warning to keep it out of our bodies. The nose is the first organ to make sensory contact with the offending substance. That's why the nose projects out over the mouth. The mouth is the entrance into the body for food, and the nose projects out over it to sniff the material that's about to enter. If it senses a bad smell, it advises the person not to allow entrance. He writes, I know of a wealthy person who lost his nose in an automobile accident. The surgeons made a plastic nose for him, so that looks real. But anybody who sees him cannot comprehend all of his troubles because he doesn't have a nose. Although we think of the nose as the organ of smell, it is much, much more than that. Chavilov says Afla Horia. Now I'm reading from Rabbi Miller. The nose is the main entrance for the ear that we breathe into our lungs. As it is drawn into the nostrils, it then passes through a series of narrow, twisted passages called sinuses. Until last night, I thought sinuses were the name of a sickness. So my daughter had a good laugh. Sinuses are things in the body. They are coated with a sticky mucus whose purpose is to catch dust particles and other contaminants that are in the ear. At each turn of the nasal passages, the ear is effectively forced against a blank wall, which gives the mucus a better chance to catch the dust particles in a sort of flypaper action. As a result, when the ear reaches the lungs, it is dust-free. The dust particles that become trapped in the mucus are like small airplanes carrying germs, which can be harmful to the body. To make sure these germs are ejected, Hashem has built into us the miraculous instinct of sneezing. When the nasal passages become overloaded with dust, a sneeze is triggered. Sneezing is a complex process in which the lungs are filled up with a supply of air to build up the necessary pressure, which is then released explosively. No human intelligence is involved in doing this. Even the smallest baby sneezes when necessary. It breathes in enough air to fill up its lungs and then shoots it out with the explosive pressure. The dust particles that are trapped in the mucus cause it to become thicker and partially solidified. The mucus is ejected by sneezing or blowing one's nose, cleaning out the contents of the sinuses. However, the mucus membranes are constantly producing fresh mucus, so that in a healthy person there's never a shortage. And he goes on and he keeps talking about that, and the fluid from the mucous membranes moistens the ear because the lungs need air that is clean and wet, and the lungs need warm air. So as the air enters the nose and passes through the sinuses, it is warmed by the heat from the many tender blood vessels that are under the surface of the nasal passages. Because of their tenderness, the blood vessels in the nose can become the source of nosebleeds. Then he talks about sinuses. And then he talks about, you go over to someone, this is what I started off the class with, you go over to someone and say, I'm so thankful, Hashem, for my nose. And, you tell that to anybody and they'll think you're nuts. Okay, we'll stop here. Mrs. Manrix, you're going to take care of this? It doesn't have to be, we're going to take a month. Everybody has a month. Everybody has a month. Okay? I'm sorry?
They are putting out Chaydus HaVavus with a transcription of Rabbi Miller's tapes. Rabbi Miller has tapes on Chaydus HaVavus. They are transcripting it. They did the Hakdama to the Sefer. They skipped Shar HaYichud, and this is Shar HaBechina. So this is Chaydus HaVavus by Rabbi Miller. He didn't write this book, it's a transcription of his tapes. It's very, very hard to get the Sefer.
Oh, I hear.
Very hard. Your best bet is to contact his son-in-law and just ask how you can get it. Get in touch with this number. It's just so hard to get. I'm even talking about in America. It's hard to get. Forget about
it. Very quickly, my little one just started walking a few months ago, and my husband said, how come I can't crawl like that? So the teacher said, don't you know the kneecaps don't develop till later, and they're mushy? I'm like, what is that? The kneecaps are delayed. Even the kneecaps are delayed. It's so
sorry, I don't have my glasses. I left them at the chair.
718-258-7400. And ask how you can get this. I don't know who you're talking to. You're talking to Simcha Sachaim Foundation.
All right.
And just say, how do I get hold of the cipher?
Which is cool.
Rabbi Migdal, Rabbi Miller, Achaydus HaVavos, Shar HaBechina. I recommend that once you get it, you get the one on the Hakdama to the Achaydus HaVavos also. This is only the second volume they ever put out.